to Planetary Spirit, coming to you on ETIN, Emerson College's Talk and Information Network. My name is Jeff Ferranini, and I invite you on an exploration of spirituality. And my guest today is Don Oscar Miró Quesada, who originated the Pachacuti Mesa tradition of cross-cultural shamanism, also known as PMT, and is the visionary founder of the Heart of the Healer, the Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, Foundation. He is a well-respected Kamasakwa curandero and Alta Misa Yok adept from Peru, OAS Fellow in Ethno-Psychology, and an invited observer to the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and a member of the Birth 2012 Welcoming Committee convened by Barbara Marx Hubbard. Don Oscar has been leading shamanic apprenticeship expeditions to sacred sites around the world since 1986, with special emphasis on the millennial healing traditions of Peru and Bolivia. His life is passionately dedicated to the revitalization of ethno-spiritual wisdom traditions as a way to restore sacred trust between humankind and the natural world. And he is also the co-author of a book entitled Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, and his co-author is Bonnie Glass Coffin, PhD. And last but not least, his website is www.mesaworks.com. That's MESAWORKS.com. So it is indeed a pleasure to welcome today to Planetary Spirit, Don Oscar Miró Quesada. Hello, Don Oscar. How are you?
Doing very well, my good brother Jeff. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, you are so quite welcome. And I wanted to just kind of take a little something here from the prologue from Bonnie Glass Coffin, your co-author, who introduces us to you in a little bit more of an intimate way. And she says, Don Oscar, born in Lima in 1951 to a very intellectual family, Oscar Miró Quesada spent his early years in Peru. As a child, he struggled with chronic illness. He struggled in school, and he struggled with family dysfunction. When he was 10, he experienced what many would describe as a miraculous healing facilitated by beings from beyond the veil. This experience informed his early interests in exploring shamanism as a doorway into all the realms of consciousness that can help us understand life's deeper mysteries. So that just had that wonderful tantalizing piece there. Of course, then I read the book. So would you talk about what took place when you were 10 years old? You were suffering from asthma. Your family lived on the coast of Peru, down in the city area, and your father and mother decided to move up into the mountains because your doctor at that time, a world-class doctor, had said the only way you're going to be able to have a normal or better life is if you breathe cleaner air. And so they brought you to the mountains. And sometime around the age of 10 or so, you're lying in your bed, and can you take it from there?
And I entered into a state of severe hypoxia in which my capacity for breathing was paralyzed, basically, and slowly and progressively began losing consciousness and fading out and basically vaporizing, disappearing as a corporeal experience. and as a being with a body. Did the traditional departure from this corporeal experience of being human through the tunnel of light that is spoken about so often in anecdotes and near-death experiences and things of that nature. Yet prior to embracing that most exquisite state of blissful surrender and liberation from the struggles of the world, I heard my nickname being called in the background in a very echoing, rhythmic fashion. And my nickname that was given to me by my father because of my inherent curiosity as a child was Eager Beaver. So he used to call me Beaver in English. And I heard my childhood nickname being called in this echoey fashion, Beaver, come back, return, come back. And with a jolt, I felt myself back in my body. Now, let me also inject here, or interject, that I was amnesic. I was in total forgetfulness of this experience until I had my first formal ritual experience with Don Celso Rojas, my primary mentor in Peruvian Camasca curanderismo, or, you know, coastal shamanism, when at age almost, you know, just before I turned 18, when all of these experiences and memories returned, and I'll get to that in a moment. Mm. So when I was 10 years old, up in Chosica, elevation of 11,000 feet, and had this episode of severe hypoxia and disappearance of self, when I returned to consciousness in my bed in this dark room, I saw these shimmering, luminescent figures of wispy types of light emerge, one to my left, one to my right, and one standing at the foot of my bed. Very elongated and circulating particles of light, scintillating, very tall, 7 feet or more. And they coalesced in form as these three wizened old Merlin-type beings with long white robes, flowing hair and long white beards, piercing blue eyes, or bluish eyes, transparent is the best way I could describe it, transparently soft aquamarine, and an infinite compassion, ineffable love, just holding space for me to reintegrate, for me to come back into my human awareness. And once that happened, to make a process that is pivotal in my awakening as a soul on this planet in service to Gaia, the one on my left bent over, basically arched itself like a willow tree would, with these cascading rays of light, and placed his ethereal lips to my chest. And in a classic shamanic extraction method, began to suction the asthmatic condition out of my entire body, out of my physical vehicle, because I didn't only feel my lungs be cleared and cleansed of any tightness or constriction, but I felt from the tips of my toes and fingers and tip of my head all toxicity, everything that had been at a cellular level programmed to be constrictive in my experience of life, to be removed. And so it was this interminable extraction, and then an offering of that entire state of constricted human experience to the heavens, in which it just dissipated into even more refined particles of luminosity. I took a breath, a physical breath, and was amazed. And from that day on, I never experienced an asthmatic condition again, and was able to engage in all of the normal activities that, you know, children and teenagers and young adults did in Peru. For I was born in Peru and lived continuously there until I was 18 when I came to the United States, and then returned every year to continue my apprenticeship 2 to 3 months a year with Don Celso in Salas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one to the my right, after that extraction, did a transmission of it, much like what happens in shamanic dismemberments, in classic visitations by a totem, an animal or some ancestral shamanic presence in one's culture. Often the person experiences a death and a dismemberment and a pulling apart and a reconfiguration, in which the power animal or the shamanic ancestor spirit helper blows into the body the power that they themselves have incorporated, all the qualities of and medicines, as we say, of that animal and or person, and therefore make them an ally, make them a sacred custodian of that same medicine. So in the person to my right, the being to my right, person did this transmission with both hands. And finally, the one at the foot of my bed, which is the most significant of this experience, I know I'm being a bit long-winded, but you did ask me to take
it. Oh, no, I'm loving this story.
Okay. Began to transmit in form of image and archetypal reverie and vistas and visions my future, basically. The various phases in my own progression as a soul on this planet, and the relationships I would have, the education I would pursue, the foibles I would make, and if I would have known better at my young age that these were just like prophecies, they weren't meant to be fulfilled but to change, to be avoided, I would have made some choices differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yet even knowing that certain situations would occur based on my own doing that would be detrimental to living a life of balance and purpose, I chose just the opposite and brought forth those anticipated or prescient visions that were provided. So the being at the foot of my bed gave me a life overview, much like is purported to occur when people have near-death experiences, where they have a life review prior to entering into the fullness of the light. This was a light overview, a illumination of the most pivotal moments that I could anticipate being part of my self-discovery and my service path to the world. And then I closed my eyes and went into a trance-like state. Well, I was asked to do that, indicated, and then woke up the next day feeling the best I had felt in my, 10 years of experience, because I was 10 years old. Was able to return to school. I didn't miss a year of schooling, so I had to repeat that year. And then when I was 17 years old,
Oh, well, let's not jump ahead too quickly.
Okay. Very well.
I want to read something from your introduction of this book, Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, because I think this really gets to the heart of what your teachings are about. This is in my humble opinion. And these are, of course, your words. So you say, as I share my particular journey with you now, my wish is that you remember to receive life as it is in order to embrace the wholeness of your birthright. Remembering used to be easier than it is now. Once upon a time, we moved through a wilderness where every plant, every rock, and every animal spoke to us, embracing us in its song. Every moment was animated, charged with vitality, and a sense of life-affirming wonder. All humanity delighted in the ebb and flow of this fluid correspondence with the natural world. When we were attentive and appreciative, we remained immersed in the abundant spirit of Mother Nature. We viscerally understood our Earth Mother's personal dream. We were aware of the diverse expressions of her cosmic eras and world cycles, sensitive to the seen and unseen forces that held the fabric of creation together. We established deep alliances with those powers for the greatest good of all. And so then at some point further on, you say, the story I tell here is how I came to this place of remembering my beauty, my wholeness. My prayer is that it may serve you on your journey also. And you talk about this time of Pachacuti, or as you call it, the great world turning. What is that, and what do you do that helps us to prepare for that?
Certainly, and thank you for reading that that section, because it encapsulates with poetic liberty the truth of what, in my own experience, our human destiny is about and must be fulfilled in a good way, with beauty, with grace, and with an understanding that we are whole in essence, and that it is our birthright. So, yes, as part of this awareness of the inherent interrelatedness of the great web of life, of the sacred hoop upon Gaia, there are cosmic eras, cycles, and tonalities, rhythms, and pulses that have a prescribed order to them, and that have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And depending on the scale of their experience, whether they are on the galactic or even cosmic level of the great turning, of the moving, the pulsing, the ebb and flow of the great dream within creation, they become rather transformative moments in our human experience, both on an individual and social level. So the word Pachacuti, P-A-C-H-A-K-U-T-I, in Runasimi, or the Quechua, the dialect of the Andes, literally means world reversal or cosmic transformation. And it refers to the truth that the only permanent thing in life is change. Everything is in flux. Everything moves and reconfigures itself according to the will of a wisdom far greater than our human understanding allows. And aligning oneself with that great originating mystery and the way it expresses itself through these cyclical moments provides a glimpse into how to best prepare for the change, for the great turning, which is a term that Joanna Macy also uses in relating to our current paradigm shift that we must embrace in order to be live a more sustainable human future on this planet and not be the current weight drain on Gaia's body. So Pachacuti, from the Kamaska, or which means he or she who contains creative power, is a pattern in the natural world that we befriend, that we call through invocation, through evocation, through decree, through prayer, and through ritual gesture into our life. And we harness the powers, virtues, and forces that are behind these great turnings and give them ritual expression and ceremonial act. And based on the field of resonance with these cycles that one is able to sustain as a healer, as a ritualist, as an earth-honoring servant, the changes can be modulated and reduced in the demand that may be destructive or painful or induce additional suffering, if you get my drift.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's an art form. It's being an artist with life, if I may put it that way.
Mm. Could you talk a little bit about the term Aini, A-Y-N-I, and how that is so essential to the perspective that the Peruvian shamanic worldview brings forward?
Certainly. And I just want to thank you, Jeff. It's so rewarding to know that a radio host has truly read the book and groks what it's about. So I just wanted to recognize that, and it feels very, very good.
Well, let me also say it was a pleasure to read this book, a true pleasure.
Well, thank you. And coming from you keeps me going.
So
Aini. Aini literally means today for me, tomorrow for you. You know, that's what it literally means. It means, living in awareness of sacred reciprocity, of the importance of being attentive, remaining attentive to how much one receives versus how much one gives, and to orchestrate one's life accordingly so that there's not an imbalance in that exchange. And so the sacred lifeways of not only the Highland people that this Quechua term is derivative of, but of the coastal peoples, even the mestizo or the mixed blood and of the Amazonian tribal nations, their life way is all about keeping things in balance, in right proportion. And they are living gently and with reverence on the earth. And when you live with Aini in your heart, The key, well, not the key, I would say the blessing that is received is an awareness of the perfection of each moment to begin with, and a freedom from the illusion of wanting to control that moment, and also it helps cultivate deep gratitude, a sense of profound thanks and thanksgiving, and, you know, making gestures of offering, consecrating and sanctifying the earth upon which you work. So it results in a true restoration of the sacred dimensions of life within the worldview of a people. And we have, unfortunately and sadly, put that on hold in our human experience that is so often dominated by consumerist intentions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a short break now. So, Don Oscar Miro Quesada, would you stay on the phone line with us?
Of course.
Okay, great. And we're talking today with my guest, who is the co-author of a very powerful and beautiful book called Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life. He is the co-author, along with Bonnie Glass Coffin, Ph.D., and Don Oscar's website is www.mesaworks.com. That's MESAWORKS.com. And you are listening to Planetary Spirit, where past interviews are available on the website, and that's www.planetary-spirit.com. And right now we're going to be taking a short break. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Fiorinini, your host, and today we're talking with my guest, Don Oscar Miró Quesada, who along with Bonnie Glass Coffin, PhD, are co-authors of a book entitled Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life. And his website is www.mesaworks.com. That's MESAWORKS.com. And during the break, we were listening to Paul Winter from his CD retrospective entitled Wolf Eyes. And the cut we listened to was Song for the World. So welcome back, Don
Thank
Oscar.
You, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. And if I may mention that I'd like your listening audience to also visit the heartofthehealer.org, www.heartofthehealer.org, which is the alliance that I founded in 2001 to be a planetary vehicle for broader dissemination of the Pachacuti Mesa tradition of cross-cultural shamanism, and also is the hub for the co-creation of sacred community, sacred earth-based communities of contemporary shamanic practitioners in this tradition. And through heartofthehealer.org, you can also access more information about both Bonnie Glass Coffin, my beloved sister and, you know, renowned cultural anthropologist, leading world expert in female healers of Peru, as a matter of fact. Mm. And her information you can find there as well as everything you'd find on Mesa Works. And the reason I say this is because Mesa Works is being merged or morphed into Heart of the Healer.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Now, let me also let people know that in your School of Heart of the Healer, or Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, you have, I think it's five steps that you bring each one of those letters of Thoth into. And so the first T is trusting soul. The second letter, H, is honoring spirit. The O is opening heart. The next T is transforming mind. And the last letter, H, is healing body. And you say, we awaken to our true selves as we reclaim our birthright of unlimited power to change the world. So now I'd like to fast forward to the story you wanted to tell before, but I kind of asked you to hold back on, which is where you met your maestro, Don Celso Rojas Palomino, and he initiates you into the secrets of a 3,000-year-old shamanic tradition called Kamaska Corandirismo. Now, you're 18 years of age or 17 years of age. You're a surfer dude, and you stumble on this older guy with three of your buddies, and he's kind of looking at you like, yeah, I got about 30 seconds for none of you.
Right, exactly. Well said.
But what happens when he looks in your eyes?
A true experience of re-membering, a coming back into sacred relationship with, at a level that I had not experienced before. Little did I know that he had been anticipating our encounter, as many people with vista or vision are able to see or dream. You know, he played it very cool, though. He didn't, you know, want to fully disclose that he was pleased to see me, because he was, you know, had his way. Yet he did send this, my three other buddies packing and said, you out, you stay. And that's all I knew. And I was transfixed in the moment, and he probably could have told me, go out and harvest my entire field of sugarcane in one day, and I would have done it at that point, you know. So, yeah, he asked me to stay, and it was the beginning of an extraordinary immersion into the pre-Columbian psyche and folk healing ways of the northern coastal peoples of my country of Peru.
But can you talk about what it was that he saw in you, where the connection was from 10 years old that you got that he knew you?
It's not that I just happened upon him. Being a surfer dude, his fame is the most skilled and masterful ritualist that used the visionary cacti known as San Pedro or Chicuseyos Pachanoy, which is an integral part of our healing work up in the northern coast, had brought me to him. I wanted to learn the art of preparing this sacred plant spirit medicine. It was the 60s, remember, 1969. So, and I was, I had embraced the flower child experience fully, even though I was living in Peru. You couldn't get away from it. Plus, I was always fascinated by the potential of non-ordinary states of consciousness to induce healing changes in people. So I was already playing around with the idea of incorporating some shamanic work into maybe my future studies as a healer. So he saw in me a return of a possibility of a dream he had of exposing the traditions of his people to the northern regions, to the more developed nations of the world, specifically the United States. And he knew that the only way to safeguard and revalue the healing arts of the traditional peoples of Peru was if people from developed nations, modern industrialized countries such as the United States, would find value in them and approach them with more reverence than our own people were approaching them with. And hence, through their example, initiate a rediscovery of these arts and a safeguarding of their medicine ways by our own people that were really ignoring them, desecrating them, and even attempting their eradication because of the modern medical approach to healthcare.
So, Don Oscar, let me, if I may, read something from your book, because I think this is really quite amazing, where you're talking about meeting with Don Celso, and he is inviting you to kind of take part in what the families who are coming for healing. So you say, sometime later, after the tobacco offering was given and after his patients were cleansed with the sacred objects on his altar, out of the center of his banco, a light started to circulate. I blinked my eyes in amazement. The light continued to rise from the mesa. As it emerged, it coalesced into a large, oval, pulsing field. As I continued to watch, the same three wizened, shining ones that had visited me and healed me of asthma 8 years before appeared before us now. Was I dreaming? Was this really happening? At first, I didn't notice Don Celso's sidewards glance. Then he elbowed me firmly, jarring me from my reverie. "Do you remember them?" he asked. "Yes, yes, I do," I stuttered back. At that moment, my entire reality shifted. I felt transported back in time to a moment I had all but forgotten. In less than a nanosecond, everything that had been shown to me at age 10 during that near-death experience came back into my awareness. And then you go on to say, as soon as the ritual ended, I asked Don Celso if I might apprentice with him, and he agreed. That's really, really quite powerful.
Well, it was profoundly transformative and also disturbing at the same time. You can imagine that one's comforting little consensus reality
was shattered.
Being shattered in one instant would thrust one into a state of ontological insecurity for life. But fortunately, I had a seasoned guide that kept me grounded. Yet when I realized that another person in the flesh was witnessing the same apparition of these three wizened ones that I had forgotten entirely about until it was the right time to remember, had a relationship with them as I did, it made me understand at a visceral level how limited our sensorial perception of reality is, or of the unlimited dance of Gaia and Indra is, if I may use a Hindu reference. For this was remarkable as a mirror for me to wake up and get with the program.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And he put you through all kinds of tests and everything. Then, you know, he would do different healings, need certain herbs, plants, or whatever. And there was this one plant at this one time that, you know, in order to get this plant, you could only gather it at the, I think it was the new moon, no, the full moon. So that plant would be, you know, have the most juice, nectar, or vitality that was needed. Then you also say that at that time in Peru, there was a state of emergency. And so there was like martial law. Anybody being found out at night, there weren't any questions. They just shot you. And you had to go to this specific area where this plant was, which was inside a military installation. And you get there, and he's saying, gee, it's not right yet. We're going to have to go back again. So then the second time you go back, and what would take you a day to normally go, it was incredibly dry that day, and it took you 3 days to get to this area. And you get there, and then you and the other people that are with you, his other apprentices, are really thirsty. And so you gather the plants, but then this miracle happens, which is kind of on par with the fishes and the loaves, where he says, are you guys thirsty?
Yes, not only kind of on par, I would say exactly the same when it comes to the miracle of a higher will working, using a two-legged person as an instrument of service to the health of others. So, yeah, these are two different occasions. The one during the time of the military occupation of Peru was in a desert area that was military territory where we were going to go harvest the San Pedro cactus. And, you know, it's also remarkable that it was even flowering at the time because it was a new moon and it needed to have a full moon. But there were several inconsistencies that shouldn't have happened that resulted in being able to allow a crack between the worlds so that we could be safe. And I can go into more detail of that. But in terms of the satiation of our thirst, that was on another occasion in which we were going to harvest a different medicinal herbs. And with the phenomenon of El Niño, which is that current, that warm current that comes up the Pacific that affects all of the Pacific coastal peoples, north and south, there's, you know, incredible torrential rains and then incredible droughts, and it changes the entire landscape. So that is why ordinarily a gathering medicine pilgrimage of one day took 3 days, because that territory was unrecognizable. Hmm. Once we got to this place, we had run out of water, we'd run out of food, you know, and in his inimitable style, Don Celso said, "My sons," because I was with Martin, his main auxilio, his son-in-law, and Hugo, his older son, which were also his main assistants in the mesadas. He said, "You must be very happy. Sit down." And so he said, "Let's enter into prayer." And so we all entered into prayer, and he closed his eyes and placed his right hand with palm directed to the heavens up. And his left hand was resting on the knee of his left leg. And his concentration was intense. And all of a sudden, out of thin blue air, these orange forms started to coalesce and take spherical shape and turn into oranges and plop from his hand down to the earth. One, boom, another two, boom, another three, boom, another four. Four succulent oranges came out of thin air. And, you know, your listeners may have heard of Sai Baba and his ability to bring vibhuti into the world. To me, it was the same thing, which is the same thing of the fishes and loaves. And there is a way of reaching through the curtain, through the veil, if you are an earnest devotee of the great work. So those oranges were the most satiating, succulent, life-restoring food or banquet I've ever had in my life. It gave us the sufficient life force to continue the gathering of our medicines, which really resulted in Don Celso just pointing out one small little purple flower and saying, "Next time you come here and you see this, harvest it," and then took us back. So basically the entire time he was playing with us, you know.
Well, before we run out of time, can you talk about the basic Pachacuti Mesa configuration, which you have illustrated in your book, and how it's in a spiral type of energy?
Certainly. And as the chapters of the book indicate, we went ahead and very carefully, with great insight into the cosmovision that is embodied in the Mesa. The Pachacuti Mesa, or healing altar ground, is a mirror of heaven. And it basically reflects the order and the symmetry of creation within it. So entering into relationship with the power objects, the ceremonial items on the sacred ground, one is able to harness creation for healing purposes for self, others, and planet as a whole. The chapters, the five chapters, as you mentioned before, are based on the acronym The Heart of the Healer, that is T-H-O-T-H, which is also the name of the Egyptian ibis-headed scribe Thoth, or Hermes Trismegistus, the thrice great Hermes, the great purveyor of the sacred mysteries to the Western initiate. And so the Mesa, it has all five directions in it. In the south is the healing for body. It's the place of the physical. In the west is the opening of heart. It is the place of the emotional. In the north, it is the trusting of spirit, or honoring of spirit, the place of the spiritual. And in the east, it is the transforming of mind or the place of the mental. And in the center, it is the trusting of soul, which is the soul body. So you have the elements earth, water, air, fire, and ether, or quintessence, all in this. So if you move from the south in a spiral-like pattern, much like the golden spiral or the Fibonacci numerical sequence, you move from the solid state to the liquid state to the gaseous state to the plasma state and to the dark matter or state, which is the Higgs boson condensate in physics. So you alchemically begin to raise the vibrational frequency of material experience to ever more refined levels of resonance with the dreaming of creation itself. And when you are properly trained in these arts, you are able to live and embody what we call right action, born of compassionate spiritual wisdom, unites. Action of the body, compassion of the heart, spiritual awareness of the north, wisdom of the mind, unification by the soul. And that is the best way I can illumine in word at this time the healing arts of this Pachacuti Mesa altar ground.
Very well done. Thank you. And I just want to let people know that you have a master's degree in humanistic and transpersonal clinical psychology from the State University of West Georgia, as well as a BA in psychology from Duke University in competitive religion. So while you're at the University of West Georgia, you're in the psychology department there, and you find out that one of your office mates was Raymond Moody, who is the author of the book Life After Life that makes him the premier authority in the world on the topic of near-death experiences. But somewhere along the line, you are asked to put on a presentation about what you do and the work that you do in your Peruvian kind of personality and persona. And so there's this big gathering in one of the assembly halls, and you're noticing that the lights, the fluorescent lights, are really bothering you, and you're starting to feel kind of nervous. And what happens? And then tell me what this fellow Mike Aaron says. And we've got about 5 or 6 minutes for this to happen. So
Well, you're referring to the first time I ever fulfilled my bequeath, my compacto, or the oath I took with Don Celso prior to his passing, which was to bring these traditions to the northern regions and share them with Western acculturated peoples so that they could really value and experience the true power of their practice in the world, and hence initiate a safeguarding of them in our own country. And I had hemmed and hawed and resisted that, and yet this was the ideal opportunity to do it. This was 4 years after Don Cecil had passed. He never gave me a timeline. And yes, I was a faculty member there and shared office space with great luminaries of the transpersonal and humanistic psychology emergence at the time, for the whole program had been founded by Abraham Maslow, who came down from Brandeis to do so. And I had the opportunity to do a grand rounds, which included all the graduate students, undergraduate and faculty members within the social science departments, a presentation on Peruvian shamanic arts. Yet I decided that's where I first revealed the Pachacuti Mesa, which is my own synthesis of this. And we do our healing rituals in the dark, preferably with a new moon, meaning without light even in the sky, so that we could see more clearly. And they start traditionally Tuesdays and Fridays, and they start at around 10 and don't end until the first ray of dawning in the morning. Of course, I wasn't going to do a traditional mesada, but I had 3 hours. So I went ahead and darkened the room because it was very disturbing. I was not able to see into people. The minute that that occurred, I was able to look into people and see the life force, the level of life force that was emanating, not only surrounding their physical form, but pulsing in the area between the heart and the solar plexus, where there's this type of spiral movement that we learn to detect. And I saw Dr. James Klee, a very well-recognized scholar in the field of transpersonal psychology, having some troubles. He was already an elder, and I brought him up to the north of my mesa, of my healing altar, and looked into him and did some limpias and suspendidas, some clearings and cleansings and extractions from his bioetheric body, and then a transmission of causae, of life force, into his physical body, and boom, he just came back to life. And he was a man that was quite objective as a scholar, so he wasn't going to jump up and down. But when he sat down, he said, "I'm feeling considerably, better or improved, Oscar. Thank you."
And Oscar, I'm sorry. We're kind of running out of time, but that's a wonderful story because this really was the beginning of you being invited to teach this work in a academic setting. I just want to read the last quote towards the end of your book, which I think encapsulates this book nicely. And you say, "Remember this always. The great work is not so much about changing the world as it is about changing ourselves in the process. As we commit to this quest in the graceful honoring of all life that will naturally flow from our actions, positive transformations must occur in the world. To unlock the magic of personal healing and global transformation, the Pachacuti Mesa can support us. We need only to act from a place of sentient awareness of the I Am." Thank you so much, Don Oscar Miró Quesada, for being my guest today on Planetary Spirit.
It is an honor. Thank you all for listening, and to you, Jeff, for opening the sacred space to share my story.
Amen. And my guest today on Planetary Spirit was Don Oscar Miró Quesada, whose book is Lessons in Courage, and his website is www.heartofthehealer.org. And coming up, my guest will be Chris Lemig, whose book is entitled The Narrow Way, and it's about being gay and then learning Buddhism. And so, blessings to you all.